And now, with over 25 years of experience integrating mental health and spirituality, the author of Reclaiming Authenticity, When Ancestors Weep, and Redeeming the Bereaved, here is Dr. James Houck.
All right. Good evening, everybody, wherever you are in the world at this time. Welcome to Reclaiming Authenticity, finding one's courage to reclaim that which has always been in you. In fact, being able to reclaim and remember that which you have always been and are. I'm Dr. James Houck, and if you would like more information about me, or if you want to leave me comments about tonight's show, I invite you to visit the website. It's www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. That's www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. And once you get to that page, you'll see where there's a section down below where you can just leave me your comments, the chit chat, or any suggestions for future shows. I certainly appreciate it. And just in case you cannot spend the entire hour with me this evening, that's okay. You know, these broadcasts are now podcasted. In case you want to go back and listen again, or you can go back into the archives, and you can listen to previous shows. It's the same website. You just find the button there that says Archives and click on it, and you can find a show that you would like to listen to or re-listen to. And also, you can catch these shows on iTunes and download them there from iTunes. So, very happy to be with you here tonight and every other Wednesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And, you know, each and every one of these broadcasts are dedicated to the integration of spirituality and our mental health, all within the context of our relationships with ourselves, others, and God or the divine. And, you know, over the past couple of weeks, I've run into a couple of people who, you know, have asked me just a simple question, like, well, why the integration? Why does there need to be an integration of spirituality and our mental health? Well, there's actually a very good reason for that. It is very intentional because one of a good friend of mine, Harold Koenig, Dr. Harold Koenig, he's a professor of psychiatry and behavioral services at Duke University Medical Center on research. And he had written an article way back in 2008. It was published in the Journal of Religion, Spirituality, and Mental Health, and it was a review of Canadian Journal of Psychiatry. And what he said about the integration of spirituality and mental health certainly rings true. And he writes that religious and spiritual beliefs and their practices, their rituals, may be important resources for people coping with illness. In other words, some research shows a connection between your beliefs and your sense of well-being, such as positive beliefs or comfort or inner strength gained from one's religion or spirituality and meditation and prayer, to name a few. Now, improving your spiritual health may not necessarily cure an illness, but it will certainly help you to feel better. And there are also several ways that spirituality can support your mental health. You may feel a higher sense of purpose, a sense of peace, hope, and meaning. You may experience more confidence and self-esteem and self-control. So there are many positive outcomes related to the integration of our mental health and our spirituality. And pretty much, you know, finding one's courage to reclaim that which has always been in you depends on this integration of our mental health and spirituality. Because the more faithful we are to the integration of these two disciplines, the stronger and the deeper and more profound the transformation in our lives becomes. So the more committed we are to the integration of our mental health and spirituality, the more of a transformation we find in our lives. In other words, sooner or later, a transformation is going to show up on some level to some degree within our lives. Now, for those of you who've been listening to me for some time, I always share that I start off this show with just a very solid belief, just a very profound belief that all of us come into this world already equipped and graced with everything that we need in this life in terms of our giftedness, our skills, our talents, our strengths, and character traits, and so on and so forth. And how we live out our skills and talents and strengths and giftedness and so forth is in and through various relationships. These could be personal relationships, they could be professional relationships, but the common denominator, if you will, is, or should say, are relationships. And this is a very important aspect when considering who we are and remembering who we are or reclaiming who we are. Because although we may have similar gifts and skills and talents and strengths and character traits, no two people express these things identically. In other words, each of us have a thisness about us that cannot be duplicated. It's true. People can try and imitate how we do things, but no one person has the ability to duplicate us. That's because within us lies what the 12th century scholar John Duns Scotus referred to as acheitas, a thisness, a uniqueness, if you will. Or as I like to explain it to the kids I counsel and the teenagers I counsel, it's like we all have a thumbprint. That's our acheitas. That's our uniqueness. Because although we all have a thumbprint, no two thumbprints are alike. It is unique. That's how we can tell one another apart. And therefore, this acheitas or thisness is their own uniqueness. And what they do well is because of their uniqueness and who they are. And therein lies the importance of this realization of who we truly are. But, unfortunately, millions of people never have a chance to discover their uniqueness because I still run into this message that's out there that if we really want to discover ourselves, we're all pointed in looking in the wrong direction or the wrong places. We're told to look for thisness in the externals of life, or the accumulation of things, or the accomplishments, or the accolades. But this is not where our thisness, uniqueness, and acheitas is to be found. Because instead, this full expression of who we are is to be found with the deep realization and full experiences with ourselves as soul. That's where we really see this uniqueness come through. And yet, what often presents a huge challenge to this realization often comes when we experience our deepest physical, emotional, psychological, and even spiritual woundedness in and through relationships. Because we often go through life and this as well as I do. Sometimes we're just minding our own business and we are in the wrong place at the wrong time, and something traumatic happens to us. Or maybe due to some other pleasant, unpleasant experiences, we may feel like we need to hide our giftedness, such as we, depending on what we experience, just such negativity in our lives, we may feel like we just need to give up and give in to the labels and the stereotypes that others want us to be for them so that they feel good about themselves. And I can't tell you just how many people I sit with have to struggle with this the most because, again, they're looking for who they are in all the wrong places. And after a while, they may have bought into the labels and the stereotypes that, clearly come from other people, and that, it's all based on conditional love and acceptance. that if you want to get my love, then you have to be this way, or you have to look this way. Or if you want to be a valued member of society, then you have to do this. So it's this, if, and then it's all the language of conditions. And that has no place when discovering who we are. Or we could be just convincing ourselves that, well, we just have to push that giftedness way down so that others cannot see it. Or maybe you were told that you would never amount to anything, or whatever other voice heard that there's nothing special to you. I mean, that still goes on in schools today. And not every teacher or not every person, but definitely coming from an authority figure, I still run into kids and teenagers that come across this message of, we can't really hold out hope for you because, well, that's all you're ever going to be. And I take just a real exception to that kind of message that's being spewed to the children and the teenagers who are in this process of discovering who they are and remembering who they are. But ironically, when we talk about relationships and the woundedness of being in relationships, we also have to consider that these relationships just might be within our own families. Or as we get older, they just might be among our coworkers or institutions, or they might even be among our friends. And we may assume that the people who are supposed to love us the most just might be the ones who hurt us the most because of their unhealed wounds and their underdeveloped selves. But still, all's not lost because there's a power in seeking healing, inner transformation, and the direct realization of ourselves as soul. Because when we transform, it's inevitable. We're also going to transform others by our presence, our grace, our understanding. But first, forgiveness and kindness and compassion certainly begin with how we treat ourselves. Because it's true, when we are compassionate with ourselves, when we learn to be compassionate with ourselves, we inevitably are going to be more compassionate with others. And when we learn to be more forgiving with ourselves, we then can be more forgiving with others. And when we're able to live in gratitude with ourselves, we then will discover how this opens our hearts to see and live in gratitude with others. And when we are able to truly know ourselves as a soul and live from the soul, it opens us up to understand the potential in others to see themselves as soul. So transformation, first and foremost, begins with us. But in order for transformation to occur, integration is the key. And this is really what reclaiming authenticity is all about. In fact, it can be summed up in one word, namaste. Roughly translated, it is because I see myself as a soul of light. This allows me to greet your lighted soul of who you are, even if you don't see it in yourself. Okay. Well, how is your heart today? I hope it is well. I hope you are well on this last day of the month of January. The year is flying by already. And I hope that even if you are struggling today in some capacity, that you will be able to find the rest, the comfort, and the peace you need. And if you have been listening to these shows for some time, you may ask yourself, why do I always ask about your hearts? How is your heart today? Well, there is a simple explanation for this, because according to the researchers at the HeartMath Institute, the more traditional ways of studying, let's say, the communication pathways between the head and the heart, has always led scientists to focus primarily on the heart's response to the instructions that come from the brain. However, they have now discovered that this communication between the heart and the brain is actually a very strong dynamic It's ongoing. It's actually a two-way dialogue with each organ continuously influencing the other's function. So the heart sends signals to the brain, and the brain sends signals to the heart, and it goes back and forth and back and forth. And certainly, research has shown that the heart communicates to the brain in pretty much four basic ways. Neurologically, there we go, tongue-tied, through the transmission of nerve impulses. And then there's biochemically through hormones and neurotransmitters like dopamine, serotonin, and so forth. And then biophysically through pressure waves. And then energetically through electromagnetic field interactions, this communication. So communication along these channels significantly affects the brain's activities. And so the researchers at the HeartMath Institute have shown that the messages of the heart certainly send messages to the brain, which also affects performance. So, all in all, listen to your hearts. They have a lot to say. Well, welcome to tonight's topic on dissolving the knots of the mind, transforming into oneness, dissolving the knots of the mind. Well, one of the things I run into the most when counseling others is the need for people to let go of a former concept or a philosophy or an expectation or their assumptions that no longer serve them. And we can call it stinking thinking or cognitive distortions, but a lot of times, what we think is real is not always the case. And stinking thinking is a term often used in the 12-step programs out there of AA and NA, which often refer to the negative patterns of thought that often add fuel to the fire in an addiction. And these thoughts, these cognitive distortions, as you will, these thoughts sabotage our ability to be able to see the world clearly and certainly to take responsibility for our actions. And a lot of times, the process of healing involves an awareness of these inaccurate but very personal beliefs that, as I said, no longer serve us in healthy ways. For example, my favorite example of this is that let's say we walk into a room that's just filled with people talking and laughing, and the curiosity has gotten the better of us. And I'm like, I'm going to go see what, all the commotion is about. But let's say that the minute we walk into the room and the minute they see us, everything grows quiet, except for a few crickets, that are in the corner. And we may immediately assume that. Was everybody talking about us? Or were they making fun of us? Were they telling jokes at our expense? Or did we do something wrong? Are they just gossiping? Another example of this could be, let's say you get a 6-month or a yearly evaluation, okay? And your supervisor slash boss says, well, George, you're a great employee. You're on time. You do quality work. We love it. In fact, I wish I had more, 10 more employees like you. However, there's one little area that we would like to see you improve in. Now, depending on where our thoughts are, we might come away thinking that we are the worst employee there ever was because all we can focus on is the one area that was criticized. And not all of the outstanding areas in our work. This happens all the time. And so we have to be very mindful of our thoughts. Okay. And this is where it comes into dissolving the knots, as in KNOTS, the knots of the mind. How do we take care of these knots? Because just think for a second, have you ever had knots in your shoelaces? Or let's, bring it into today's world. Have you ever had knots in your, charging cords for your phone or your iPad? You know how they get knotted up and you have to detangle them, and it's a general pain to do that. Well, these distortions are kind of like the knots in a cloth that need to be dissolved, or the knots that need to be taken out of, let's say, a power cord and so forth. And at any rate, we often believe that, well, what we see and what we hear are all that there is to see and hear. But this is simply not the case. In fact, in order for us to see things as they truly are, we need to dissolve the delusions in our mind, especially when it comes to understanding and embracing ourselves and others as living souls. And I also run into a lot of people who just not flat out deny this, but they resist it. I mean, somewhere deep down inside, they know that they're a soul, and hopefully when they die, the soul will take over and carry them to heaven and so on and so forth. But as far as having a clue as to how do we live out our days here on earth as a soul, a lot of people just know we can't go there. We can't think along those lines. You're getting ahead of yourself. You're usurping God's authority. And I clearly do not see that at all. Right. Well, my teacher in India once shared a very powerful teaching involving the Vedanta concept of laya, L-A-Y-A, laya, which means to dissolve, especially to dissolve the delusions of the mind and our perceptions of our experiences. And he stated that the mind thinks that what it sees and hears and tastes and touches and smells are true. But these sense experiences can in no way reveal the truth of our existence. So think about it this way. Suppose we are out for a walk and we're just walking by a demolition site, okay, where workers are dismantling a house. And once the house has been demolished, well, you're going to be left with a few bricks, okay? And let's say the workers even dismantle the bricks. What are you left with? Well, we're left with clay or the original state of the house's existence. Now, to the mind, the house and the bricks have been dismantled, but they are no longer objects to be seen or held or heard or whatever, because they have returned to their basic substance, that is, clay. And all things have this capacity to be understood as once having existed in their original subject, hence the soul. And however, the key in dissolving this delusion of our minds of what we can see, hear, feel, taste, and smell as real is to recognize objects as their original state or their substance. So let me put it another way. If you have ever read The Tao of Pooh, great book, great book. But it's really based on the Taoist principle of Pooh, capital P hyphen and then U. Okay, it's more like as you're blowing, let's say, a feather that has wafted down from on high. You just kind of go, puh. That's Winnie the Pooh or Winnie the Pooh. And in the story, Winnie the Pooh is translated into the image of the uncarved block, meaning that the things in their original state carry their own natural energy and power. So, in other words, whenever we manipulate the thing, such as a block of wood, or we carve the block, you may tend to think that, well, now it's lost its power. And that's simply not the case, because in the stories, Pooh Bear is the embodiment of this uncarved block because he is just very simple. He doesn't think too much about what life it means or how to change the world to suit his desires. He simply exists in this world and takes life for what it is. And yes, once we carve or we cut the wood, we can make all kinds of beautiful items from it. We can make tables and bed frames and coffee tables and dressers and wardrobes and so on and so forth. But for all of the beauty and more, all of these items have one thing in common. They're all wood. And when we break it down even further, they are all in their natural state, an uncarved block of wood. Well, let's bring this idea of understanding, or let's say seeing things as their original substance, into our world of humanity. Now, we, at our base substance or our basic existence, is that of a soul. We're not bodies that may, we see when we look in the mirror. And yes, we can see ourselves when we look into the mirror, but that's not really who we are. There's so much more to us. Yes, we have a body that needs to be cared for and fed and rested and given medicines when it gets sick or diseased. But at the end of the day, we are truly souls. And the more I consider this, the more I'm convinced that humanity's problems, often come from not being able to see ourselves and others as souls. Instead, we see just the opposite. We tend to focus on the externals, the skin, the gender, the age, the height, the weight, and so forth. And all of these externals, if you're a lover of history, as I am, have created these isms in our lives, ageism, sexism, genderism, and so forth. But when we can dissolve this illusion of the mind, we begin to understand one another in a whole new way. In fact, the isms can no longer follow because when we see each other as souls, it's not based on skin color or gender or age or height or weight or whatever. Isms just are not there when we understand ourselves as a soul and we see others as souls. But many theologians and the scholars and the scientists down through the centuries have struggled to come up with, let's say, the most accurate definition of what the soul is, let alone what is our relationship to ourselves as soul. So without trying to muddy the scholastic waters, here's my definition of what I believe the soul is. The soul is the purest essence of ourselves that exceeds all physical, emotional, and psychological limitations. Because if we strip everything else away in our lives, and we find that our soul is a divine mirror of the soul of the universe. And it is the soul whom God sees when God looks at us. Or, as God put it, before you were born, I knew you. Now, we have no idea what that looked like, and but we do know that before we were born, we were formless. And as a result, our bodies gave us form. And the soul is formless. The soul is not just something we have as a result of being creative, but the soul is who we authentically are. We're not merely bodies that have souls. It's the opposite. We are divine souls who have bodies. And in our sense, our mind and our body provide the form, that is, the breath, the matter, and the movement to our soul, which is formless. Now, interestingly, we have one example after another as a reminder of this truth. We have the Judeo-Christian scripture that notes the times when God, who is formless, dwelled in an earthly form structure. That we have the tabernacle, we have the temple, and furthermore, Christians also understand that the greatest example of God dwelling in form comes from the Gospel of John, where John writes that the Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. We have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only Son who came from the Father, full of grace and truth. And even later on in the New Testament, the Apostle Paul, echoes this. He echoes this incarnational sentiment. Let's call it that. where he writes in the book of Colossians, in Christ, all the fullness of God dwells in a bodily form. And we, as we read, further scriptural passages, let's say, we come to understand that Christ has given us examples through, let's say, service, love, forgiveness, mercy, etc., as to how to live as soul in our everyday lives. And yet, we may still believe that there's nothing more to us than a mind and a body. I mean, after all, our physical nature strongly contends for the attention all the time. I'm hungry. I'm thirsty. I'm tired. I'm in pain. I feel sick. I'm ready to procreate, and so on and so forth. But ironically, we may often misunderstand an all-important lesson as we try to drown out the soul's cry for that divine connection by focusing instead on what our egos are projecting in any given moment. Nonetheless, it's the cry of the soul in each of us to fully realize that we are first and foremost souls, and we long to have that connection and reconnection with God. I mean, regardless whether or not we've have suffered trauma, let's say, paying attention to ourselves as soul and listening to our inner cry moves us out of this illusion that a mind and body consciousness is the rule. And now, as important as they are, the mind and body are merely vehicles, if you were, to realize higher consciousness of the soul. Because when we listen attentively to our soul's cry, we become aware that everything we truly desire can never be reached by the mind and the body, because these may be driven by ego or selfishness or fear, or the avoidance of pain, and taking on pleasure and so forth. Now, this is not to say that the mind and body are all evil and that the soul is all good. This is the kind of duality that would drive people in medieval times to punish themselves with physical wounds, believing that they could suppress the ego and the physical desires in order to become more righteous and holy in the eyes of God and others. And again, this is to misunderstand who we are as a soul. We can never attain higher levels of, let's say, God consciousness through the mind and the body, because these forms are limited. Well, I would really love to hear what's on your heart about this subject. So if you would like to call in the second half of the show, that number is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And I'll be taking your calls after the break. Again, you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity, and I'm your host, Dr. James Houck. I'll be back with you in 1 minute. Okay, welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back. I'm Dr. James Houck, and you're listening to Reclaiming Authenticity, where we've been discussing in the first half of this show, the first half of the hour, the theme of dissolving the knots, KNOTS, the knots of the mind, transforming into oneness. And I had shared earlier that my teacher in India once shared a very powerful teaching involving the Vedanta concept of laya, which means to dissolve, especially to dissolve the delusions of the mind and our perceptions of our experiences. And he clearly stated to us that that the mind thinks that what it sees and hears and tastes and touches and smells is ultimately the truth. But these sense experiences can in no way reveal the truth of our existence as a soul. Okay. And I use the example of, like, say, we're walking by a demolition site where workers are dismantling a house. And once the house has been demolished, we're going to be left with bricks. And let's take it one step further, and let's just say that the workers dismantle even these bricks, and now they are left with clay or the original state of the house's existence. Now, to the mind, the house and the bricks have been dismantled, but they're no longer out objects to be seen or even held or heard or whatever, because they now have returned to their basic substance, that is, clay. And all things have this capacity to be understood as once having existed in their original substance. And yet the key in, let's say, dissolving the knots in our mind, or dissolving this illusion of what we can see and hear and feel and taste and smell as real, is to recognize an object's original state or substance. So bringing this idea into our understanding, or seeing things in their original state, let's bring this into the world of our humanity, because we, at our base substance or our base existence, is soul. We're not the bodies that we see when we look into the mirror. And yes, we can see ourselves when we look in the mirror, but that's not really who we are. We have a body that needs to be cared for, yes, and we have to feed the body, yes, we have to sleep, and we have to take medicines when the body gets sick, and when it, is diseased, we have to be treated. And but at the end of the day, we are truly souls. So in this second half of the show, let's take this topic that's, dissolving the knots of the mind. Let's take this very, very deep. By this one simple, yet you'll wrestle with this question for the rest of your life, I guarantee. And the question is this: how differently would we live our lives if we fully realized ourselves as souls? How differently would we live our lives if we fully realized ourselves as soul? And the answer is that our lives would look a lot different than what they appear to be at the present. And I also suspect that we would be so empowered to treat ourselves and all relationships with the fullest extent of kindness and love and patience and compassion and grace that the world would then definitely sit up and take notice. Well, I had shared this story before, but way back in graduate school, I was first exposed to Abraham Maslow's hierarchy of needs, which is a pretty good model. It's a model, or let's say a means of understanding our human nature and striving to achieve personal goals. Okay. And this model of understanding and understanding the self follows the logic that our lives go through stages of attaining personal needs, such as food and clothing, shelter, security, intimacy with others, goals, life meaning and purpose, and so on and so forth. And ironically, many people today believe that once they have attained self-actualization, or discovering their life's purpose and motivation and meaning, then they will have finally found their life satisfaction that has so long eluded them. Well, however, many are often met with a harsh reminder that in attaining one's dreams and ambitions and goals doesn't necessarily guarantee happiness let alone finding this inner peace that so many people talk about. And moreover, despite their accomplishments, many people still sense that something is missing from their lives. And if this is so, why then do many people feel empty when they have so much? What's the problem? Well, perhaps these feelings of disappointment with Maslow's hierarchy stems from the perception that it's a flawed model, but perhaps we need to understand that this model is limited instead. In other words, self-actualization carries us only so far. So Maslow's hierarchy is a good model, it's just limited, okay? Because attaining true happiness and joy and peace in our lives comes not in the accumulation of things, or the accumulation of degrees, or accumulation of accomplishments, but rather happiness, joy, and peace come from the grace of God's presence that can only touch our soul. Indeed, there is a greater depth of contentment and forgiveness and love and joy and peace and so on that awakens in us when we fully realize ourselves as souls. And it is through God's grace that we are able to recognize our soul's connection to God. And therefore, we can begin to dissolve the knots of the illusion of the in the mind. But still, the limitation of Maslow's hierarchy of needs model doesn't mean that self-actualization is a worthless pursuit. I mean, on the contrary, we all need to have our basic physical needs met. We all need to have a sense of personal security. We all need to have meaningful relationships and attainable goals in our lives. And we also have to understand that these earthly pursuits are always pointing us towards a higher awakening of self-realization of who we truly are. And interestingly enough, we can actually learn this lesson as we become involved in healing any intergenerational trauma that we're involved in. And this is one of the things that I really enjoy working with people who have identified their intergenerational trauma. And the first thing that I usually take people through is, to begin to think outside their linear thinking of past, present, future. And in a sense, taking a leap of faith and falling into God's grace that opens us up to this expanded consciousness. Because once we realize who we are and who we are as souls, we are then empowered to, let's say, re-engage Maslow's hierarchy of needs from a more life-giving inspiration that focuses not on an ego-driven achievement, but rather that which enhances the value, dignity, and worth of all relationships. So, for example, realized souls, people who know that they know that they know I am a soul, are no longer motivated to feed others just for the sake of, let's say, alleviating their own guilt and filling empty stomachs, but rather, now their motivation comes from the awareness that by feeding others, they're also feeding souls with compassion and grace. Instead of spending time with another out of obligation, a person who realizes themselves as a soul and knows how to live it in this life sees another soul in need of friendship and love. And instead of forgiving others from the perspective of, well, what do I get out of it? We instead forgive because we come to this realization that we're not going to allow people to carry the crippling effects that unforgiveness and bitterness has on them, on us as souls. Because all in all, as we bless others in the physical sense, we also bless them in the spiritual sense. In fact, whenever we meet the basic needs in others, these benevolent acts, let's say, inevitably nudge others closer to discover who they authentically are as a soul. So never, never, ever, ever diminish even the simplest act of kindness, compassion, and grace, because these are truly the acts that touch the soul and cause all of heaven to rejoice. I mean, even a cup of cold water can invoke this, because self-realization fulfills self-actualization. And you've heard me say this many times, that one of my all-time favorite books is The Alchemist. Love it, love it, love it. Again, if you have not read it, I highly recommend it. It's just a wonderful story. I read it several times in a year and never get tired of it. Well, if you have ever read The Alchemist, you realize that the main character, Santiago, has a journey to the Egyptian pyramids to find what he calls his personal legend. And ironically, his journey has literally brought him back to the place where he left initially. But the main point of the story is that Santiago has also been on an inward journey, because he himself has been transformed along the way. So, all in all, he was clearly not the same person he was when he left at the beginning. And this ties into one of my favorite quotes from T.S. Eliot, who once said that, let us not cease for exploration. And for all of our exploring will be for us to arrive at a place where we started and know it for the first time. And the prominent theme that runs through this book is that through the character Santiago, we also realize that when you really want something to happen, the whole universe will conspire so that your wish comes true. When you really want something to happen, the whole universe will conspire so that your wish comes true. And you are loved that much. And this is the theme that ties into today's topic, because this is something that I truly believe in, that whenever we pay attention to what has been placed in our hearts, and we hear the cry of our own soul, and we commit to it, the entire universe will make it happen if we remain open and teachable to every situation in our lives. And when we do this, we're also going to discover that we just may have been destined to embrace the cry of our soul all along. But, throughout history, physical alchemy was and is, it's still going on today. It's concerned with altering and transforming, let's say, the chemical properties within solid matter, such as changing lead into gold. But when we look at spiritual alchemy, it is definitely concerned with freeing your vast spiritual self, the soul, which is being hindered within you by the unrefined parts of yourself, such as fear, limited personal beliefs, self-loathing, and so on and so forth. Because, spiritual alchemy is vastly much, much more multifaceted, and it's ongoing. It's a continuation of the purification of our hearts, much in the same way a smith will turn up the heat beneath a hopper that contains a raw mineral or a metal. And as the heat is increased, the dross or the impurities in the metal come to the surface only to be skimmed off, making the metal purer than what it was before. And then this process is repeated over and over again and again until the metal reaches its finest purity that it can be. So we too are going through a process of a spiritual alchemy of authenticity. I mean, how often does it feel like the heat is being turned up through past and current events in the world? And therefore, when going through the process of a spiritual awakening, Sooner or later, okay, sooner or later, we are confronted with the fact that there seems to be so much more to ourselves than what we have realized, and so much more than the reality we are living in and what we have grown accustomed to. Because as we go through life, and depending on our experiences in this life, we start to question what used to be true for us. I mean, for example, okay, ever since childhood, we have a certain way in which we see ourselves, or how we see others, or how even how we see God and the world at large. And let's say that as we are growing up, we have gone through an experience or experiences that really shakes us up, or it really shatters these assumptions that we have. And we feel as though nothing makes sense anymore. Now, we don't seem to have a sense of our bearings, let alone knowing which way is up. And this can be very unnerving, just a very unnerving state or place we find ourselves in, especially if we feel like all that we have known is starting to crumble or evaporate. We can become so unsure of not only ourselves, but also whether or not if all that we see is all that there is. And however, is, the question might remain in us, like, how can we weather these storms? And when we really become serious about these questions, and we really become diligent in how do I discover myself as a soul? What knots do I have to dissolve? The illusions and the delusions of the mind. We may also discover that something greater than ourselves is tugging at our soul. They call it a stronger nudge from God, or let's say a more intense dimensional energy, or even a hunger that resonates deep within by compelling us to go and search to discover the vastness of who we truly are. And as we go on this journey, much like Santiago, we discover that there are things we need to identify and let go of and transform in order to embrace higher, more intense dimensional energy. So, in other words, rising above those negative mental, emotional, physical, and even spiritual triggers that keep us from experiencing the fullness of unconditional love. And this phenomena is at the heart of a multidimensional understanding of ourselves as a soul. And as I clearly said a little while ago, we are awakened to seeing ourselves not just as a soul, but we also begin to see one another as souls. And, just what does that mean? How do we live this out on a daily basis? And where do issues of, let's say, hatred and anger and bitterness and rage come in? How do we deal with this as a soul? Well, we first have to understand where those feelings come from in another person, or those feelings, where do they come from in us? Is there a deep wound that has never had a chance to heal? Is it an issue of a person just never realizing who they are as a soul, and so are acting in ignorance. They're just unaware of the things that they do, and so forth. And so there are ways in which you can transform the energy around certain negative emotions. But you have been listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. I am Dr. James Houck, and I am so grateful that you decided to spend this hour with me. Thank you again. And just invite you to leave me your comments about tonight's show. Reach out and even offer some suggestions as to other topics that you would like to hear. So until next time, which is February the 14th, good old Valentine's Day, the evening of Valentine's Day, everybody be safe out there, behave yourselves, and do take care. God bless.
or an answer, or just to leave 1,000 comments, or prodding around to buy a book by Dr. Hauk. It's all there. Just wander over to ReclaimingAuthenticity.com and click around. And we'll see you next Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Pacific, on BBS Radio TV.